the chilly side. For Scotland and Northern Ireland, it's a different day. It's a cool, showery, windy day for the far northwest. Showers will be heavy, possibly with some thunder and some hail mixed in there as well. And gales likely on exposed coasts, perhaps severe gales in the far north across the Northern Isles. Sheltered southern and eastern areas of Scotland and Northern Ireland, though, will see some sunshine. So it's not all doom and gloom, but it will feel rather chilly out there, particularly with the strength of the winds, highs just of 7 to 9 degrees. Tuesday night, a ridge of high pressure continues to quieten down the weather, but that means across England and Wales, we will see those winds falling light, skies remain clear, and a widespread frost to greet us on Wednesday. That's your weather.
All right, many thanks, Louise Lear. This month, a variety of programmes here on BBC Radio 4 are marking 50 years since the assassination of John F. Kennedy, including our new Book of the Week. Letters written to and from the American president have been collected for the first time by Martin W. Sandler. This week, we'll hear a selection of them in full and edited form. They mainly reflect Kennedy's concern with international affairs during his time in office, but before the presidency, life was being lived to the full, befitting a young man in his 20s, in The Letters of John F. Kennedy.
Monday, January 26th, 1942. With the United States now at war, Kennedy wanted nothing more than to join the action. But there was a problem. He had entered into a romantic liaison with a beautiful Washington Times Herald columnist named Inga Arvath.
Times Herald. Leaving the station, I saw a figure on the platform. The further the train pulled away, the less visible was the young, handsome Boston Bean.
The Danish Arvath was not only married, but she was also known for having interviewed Adolf Hitler at least twice, for having written positive things about him, and for having been his companion at the 1936 Olympic Games in Germany. This led the FBI to place Arvath under surveillance as a possible German spy.
There was the good old feeling of stinging eyes and a nasty pull at the heartstrings, which always show up when too great a distance is put between us.
Throughout their relationship, Inga Arvath, whom Kennedy called Binga, sent him many letters, often lamenting their continual partings and the fact that she was married.
And about the man.
What is notable in her correspondence is assessment of her young lover's character and her belief in the fame he was destined to achieve.
He is full of enthusiasm and expectations, eager to make his life a huge success. He strives hard himself, more than any boy in the same cotton wool position. He's so big and strong, and when you talk to him or see him, you always have the impression that his big white teeth are ready to bite off a huge hunk of life. There's determination in his green Irish eyes. He has two backbones, his own and his father's. Somehow he has hit the bull's eye in every respect. He can't fail, I have said to myself very often. I love him more than anything else or anybody in the world.
When FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover discovered that Arvath was carrying on an affair with someone who was not only a Navy ensign, but was the son of Joseph Kennedy Sr., Kennedy was transferred to a desk job in South Carolina. In 1943, with the help of his father, Kennedy was relieved of his desk duties, promoted to the rank of lieutenant, and sent to the South Pacific, where he was given command of a patrol torpedo boat, PT-109.
May 14th. Dear Dad and Mother, going out every other night for patrol. On good nights, it's beautiful. The water is amazingly phosphorescent. Flying fishes, which shine like lights, are zooming around, and you usually get two or three porpoises who lodge right under the bow. and no matter how fast the boat goes, keep just about 6 inches ahead of the boat. I have an entirely new crew, and when the showdown comes, I'd like to be confident that they know the difference between firing a gun and winding their watch. I have a lot of natives around, and I'm getting hold of, well, grass skirts, war clubs, etc. And we had one in today who told us about the last man he ate. Him Jap his eye good. They're smartening up lately. When the British were here, they had them working for 17 cents a day. But we trust them a heck of a lot better. English we no like. As far as my brother ranting to get out here, I know it's futile to say so, but if I were Joe, I would take as much time about it as I could. He will want to be back the day after he arrives, if he runs true to the form of everyone else.
On August 1st, as it patrolled the waters of Blackett Strait off the Solomon Islands, Kennedy's PT-109 was suddenly rammed and shattered apart by a Japanese destroyer. Two of Kennedy's men were killed, and several others were badly injured. It was a disaster that could have placed the young boat commander in a bad light, as it was unusual for such a fast, highly maneuverable vessel to be struck by so large a ship. But through his heroic actions, Kennedy more than redeemed himself. Abandoning the sinking PT-109, Kennedy towed his most severely wounded crewman by clenching in his teeth the strap attached to the man's life jacket, and led the remainder of his crew first to one island, then two others, in search of help. Then, plunging back into the dangerous waters, he swam for more than an hour, vainly seeking an Allied ship. Finally, the bedraggled crew was spotted by friendly natives, who reported their whereabouts to naval units operating in the area. 6 days after what has been termed the most famous small craft engagement in naval history, Kennedy and his men were rescued. For the courage and leadership he displayed, Kennedy was awarded the U.S. Navy and Marine Corps Medal.
September 12, 1943. Dear Mother and Dad, it was a terrible thing losing those two men. One had a wife and three kids. The other fella had just come abroad. He was only a kid himself. It certainly brought home how real the war is, and when I read the papers from home and how superficial is most of the talking and thinking about it. When I read that we will fight the Japs for years if necessary and will sacrifice hundreds of thousands if we must, I always like to check from where he is talking. It's seldom out here. People get so used to talking about billions of dollars and millions of soldiers that thousands of dead sounds like drops in the bucket. But if those thousands want to live as much as the 10 I saw, they should measure their words with great, great care. Perhaps all of that won't be necessary, and it can all be done by bombing.
One of the most candid letters Kennedy wrote while in the Pacific was to Inga Arvath.
Dear Binga, the war goes slowly here. The Japs have dug deep, and their willingness to die for a place like Munda gives them a tremendous advantage over us. We in aggregate just don't have the willingness. Of course, at times, an individual will rise up to it, but in total, no. Munda or any of those spots are just goddamn hot stinking corners of small islands in a group of islands in a part of the ocean we all hope to never see again. We are at a great disadvantage. The Russians could see their country invaded, the Chinese the same. The British were bombed, but we are fighting on some islands belonging to the Lever Company, a British concern making soap. I suppose if we were stockholders, we would perhaps be doing much better. But to see that by dying at Munda, you are helping to secure peace in our time takes a larger imagination than most possess. The Japs have this advantage. Because of their feeling about Hirohito, they merely wish to kill. and Americans' energies are divided. He wants to kill, but he also is trying desperately to prevent himself from being killed.
Tuesday. Dear brother, just in case you are wondering what has happened to our silk, I give it to Honey Fitz, who promised that he would deliver it to Brooks Brothers, and I then promised him a shirt out of it and Grandma a blouse. Will you please check on this? As he had Mrs. Posner on his brain, and that store will probably slice it to pieces. I also promised Timothy a shirt. Will you check up on this and notify him if the silk is there and tell Brooks to send me the bill?
Joseph P. Kennedy, Jr. had skipped his final year at law school to begin officer and flight training in Florida. One of the letters he wrote to John while he was in Florida, and John was home on leave in Hyannisport, contained a brotherly warning, a reference to one of John's many girlfriends.
I understand that you and Bunny Waters are twosoming it, and the bets are that there will be a threesome before long, and it won't be in bundling clothes, but it will have a long beak and a shotgun. Keep me posted on your movements.
Again from Joe, now in England, August 10th, 1944. After Kennedy was awarded the Navy and Marine Corps Medal.
My dear brother, your letters are always a great source of enjoyment to your noble frère, and my tardiness in writing is not attributable in any way to an attempt at discouragement of such a fine pen relationship, but rather to several pressing matters which at this time have dwindled greatly. For the last 10 days I have been stuck out in the country, far beyond striking distance of any town. Every day, I think, will be my last one here. And still, we go on. The nature of it is secret, and you know how secret things are in the Navy. I read the piece in the New Yorker and thought it was excellent. The whole squadron got to read it, and what I really want to know is where the hell were you when the destroyer hove into sight, and exactly what were your moves, and where the hell was your radar? Tell the family not to get too excited about my staying over here. I am not, repeat, not contemplating marriage, nor intending to risk my fine neck in any crazy venture. I should be home around the 1st of September, and should be good for about a month's leave. Perhaps you too will be available at that time, and will be able to fix your old brother up with something good. I have already sent a notice home about my graying hair. I feel I must make a pretty quick move, so get something that really wants a tired old aviator. My congrats on the medal. Your devoted brother, Joe.
This letter would turn out to be perhaps the most poignant John Kennedy received. It was written 2 days before Joe Jr. was killed during a secret aerial mission.
Colin Stinton was narrating The Letters of John F. Kennedy, which is edited by Martin W. Sandler and abridged for radio by Penny Lester. The other voices were Kelly Burke and Trevor White, and Richard Lang was John Kennedy. The producer was Duncan Minchell, and at the same time tomorrow, Kennedy's inauguration looms large. Now, just ahead of the shipping forecast, here's Sailing By. And now on BBC Radio 4, it's time for the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Tuesday, the 12th of November. There are warnings of gales in Viking, Forties, Cromarty, Fisher, German Bight, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Northwest Iceland 963, expected Norwegian Sea 982 by 1800 Tuesday. Developing high moving northeastwards, expected West Seoul 1037 by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking. Southwest 5 to 7, veering west 6 to gale 8, squally showers, good, occasionally moderate. North Atera, South Atera, southwesterly 5 or 6, veering westerly 6 or 7, perhaps.